Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 2 is where I've been reading from, and I'd like to continue a sequential discussion of meditation upon the lotus feet of the literary incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, which is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is described in Padma Purana. Here's the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his literary form. I'm now reading from Chapter 4, which is entitled The Process of Creation, and I'll give 5 to 7 minute little summary of what happens before this. At the end of the 19th chapter of Canto 1, Maharaj Parikshit has met Shukadeva Goswami. The glories of Shukadeva Goswami are amply presented. Maharaj Parikshit, knowing that he's about to die, he asks his parting questions of life. What is my duty? And what is the duty of people in general? Particularly, what is the duty of someone who is about to die? And the second question is, what is that subject matter which they should hear, chant, and remember always? So, the next two chapters are Shukadeva Goswami's answer leading into the beginning of the third chapter. The first chapter, renunciation and formation of a conception of God, because some people in the world don't even have a conception of God. So form a conception of God as a person by seeing God within nature. So the form of God within the universe is outlined, the universal form of the Lord. And detachment from the worldly pursuits of life. Following that, and some indication of hearing about the Personality of Godhead. Following that, second chapter, Shukadeva Goswami goes further and says one should think of the form of the Lord within the heart, abandoning this other Virat Rupa meditation, meditate upon the form of the Lord within the heart. And it describes that process of meditation. And accompanying that meditation is, again, detachment from the world. Please note, detachment is refrain. Third chapter, fourth chapter. Because one can't progress if one holds on to the idea of trying to be an enjoyer in this illusory place. One cannot make spiritual progress. Then accompanying this meditation upon the form of the Lord, meditation process is supported by the hearing process. And chapter 2 ends with describing actually above this, the fruit of this hearing process is fixing one's mind upon the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, the activities of the Lord. And this is the subject that one should hear and chant and remember always. And in that absorbed state of mind, one should engage fully in activities of service to the Lord. And there is nothing higher than this. I'm very quickly summarizing. Just a lot of very important points are being left out, but summary. Then chapter 3, as we're heading for chapter 4, chapter 3 begins with Shukadeva Goswami saying, "Now I have answered your question." And he repeats the answers. Devotional service, pure devotional service, unmixed with anything else. And one should hear and chant about the topics of the personality of Godhead, Krishna Katha. Then to make it even more clear, he describes other types of worship, worship of various devas and devis, forms of the demigods, and the spiritual energy manifestations for some temporary limited benediction. One may worship like that. But then, again, he goes to the point of worshiping of the personality of Godhead. By the worship of the personality of Godhead, all that is required will be supplied. But one doesn't need to go with a requisition slip and make the request. Just worship the personality of Godhead exclusively. This is distinguishing it because some persons may not have a clear idea. Okay, worship the Supreme, and there's so many Supremes. The pantheistic idea of so many Supremes. So Shukadeva Goswami makes it very clear. Not pantheism, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The cause of all causes, the controller of all controllers, the source of everything, the Supreme Person. He should be worshipped exclusively. And he ends. So in one sense, Srimad Bhagavatam could end. Because what's happening here is Sutta Goswami is describing to the sages of Naimisharanya what he heard when Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit were speaking. So the sages then say, "Oh my goodness, what a wonderful thing you just described to us." They describe the glories of Shukadeva Goswami, they describe the glories of Maharaj Pariksit, and then they say, surely with such a qualified person speaking and such a qualified person listening, there must have been more. What did they say? What happened next? What other topics? And they go on glorifying Maharaj Pariksit and glorifying the process of hearing about the topics of the personality of Godhead. They glorify Shukadeva Goswami. This is a carryover of the theme from the first canto, which is one of the themes of the first canto is who is the qualified speaker? Who is the qualified listener? What qualities can you look for to understand who is a qualified speaker? Who is a qualified listener? So that ends chapter 3. Again, with many other wonderful points not being highlighted. Chapter 4 begins with Sutta saying, yes, it's true. They're both so qualified. Then he goes on describing how qualified is Shukadeva, how qualified is Maharaj Pariksit. But his qualification is then describing what happened when this qualified speaker and the qualified listener got together. What happened? And it describes the process of transformation of heart. Continuing from chapter 3, if one hears and chants, but one's heart doesn't become transformed by that hearing and chanting process to the stage of bhava, where one's hairs stand on end and tears come from the eyes, it has to be understood that this person his heart is steel framed. So that isn't what happened with Maharaj Parikshit. There's some very specific things. So there's sadhana and sadhya. You know these terms? Sadhana is daily practice. And the fruit of that daily practice is sadhya, the outcome. So the fruit of devotional service in the heart of Maharaj Parikshit is being described. The first thing that happened, his mind became perfectly concentrated upon the personality of Godhead. The description is, he was already, from the time that he was within the womb, he saw the personality of Godhead. You can't do much better than that. Before you're even born, you see God. By the mercy of Lord Vishnu, he appeared before him in a very difficult circumstance, but nonetheless, he saw the form of the Lord. And because Maharaj Parikshit was so qualified, he did not, for that matter, he could not forget that experience. Throughout his whole life, he was absorbed in that meditation of that darshan of the Lord, thinking, is he here? Is he here? In each circumstance of life, examining, that's the meaning of his name, Parikshit, he was examining, is he here? Is the Lord here? Searching for contact with the personality of Godhead in every experience of life. So the key word here is application. He took that which he had received, and he was, by applying that in his life, he was cultivating it very intimately. And because he was the son of the Pandavas, or grandson of the Pandavas, rather, he was always hearing about his grandparents, but which meant he was hearing about Krishna, because Krishna was always in association with the Pandavas. So, further, the impression was being deepened by hearing and hearing it. And so his mind became more cleansed and more absorbed. And then, although he was young man, this calamity came, this curse that he should die. And he took that as an opportunity to go more deeply by the Supreme Lord's arrangement, meeting Shukadeva Goswami. And he took advantage of that opportunity to associate with Shukadeva Goswami by hearing with rapt attention and inquiring in a very eager spirit about such essential things as the real purpose of life. Everybody knows what the purpose of life is. Well, innately everybody knows what the purpose of life is. But in different degrees, that sense is covered. Even for persons, if you, you know, press the question button and out comes the answer, the purpose of life is, and they say the purpose of life is to reach God or something like that. Are they living their life that way? So there's difference between intellectual understanding. Of course, one can have a misconception, but having even the proper conception, but then acting according to that conception, applying that conception. Grananti is the Sanskrit term. Internalizing that message and living with it. So that's what Shukadeva Goswami, his association with Maharaj Parikshit meant for Maharaj Parikshit. His heart, so this is the beginning of chapter 4. Suta Goswami, because he was there and he has realized the message of the Bhagavatam and realized this whole exchange, his mind became completely focused upon the personality of Godhead without any other shelter. and his consciousness became completely freed as a result from the shelter of all things of this world, quitting his own body, and then extensions from the body, his house and or palace, the paraphernalia of the household, the relations, his kingdom, his treasury, his influence in this world. Prabhupada describes he had everything. He was the king of the whole planet, and had everyone accepting him without opposition. All glories to the king of the planet, Maharaj Pariksit. Fame, wealth, intelligence, piety, strength, everything. He walked away from it without any difficulty because of this very focused concentration upon the personality of Godhead, because of receiving from the Supreme Lord the opportunity to hear about him from Shukadeva Goswami, prior hearing about the Pandavas, prior to that seeing the form of... So he took each opportunity, each gift of descending mercy into his life, and drew it close to his heart. With that focus of his attention upon the Supreme, he was able to be detached from all worldly things. And even the activities and the fruits of activities of all types of pious activities, which I've noticed persons have some difficulty understanding, that the realm of devotion, devotional service to the personality of Godhead, is the essence of all theistic conduct. What is the purpose behind the theistic conduct? Most people think, Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, most people think the purpose of pious activity is to prosper in this life and enjoy in the next life. Even better. And there's nothing more. Piety is to enjoy nicely in the mode of goodness, in a theistic way, in a religious way, enjoy, and then enjoy even more. And the idea that there's something more than that is something the mind can't grasp. And so there's this attachment to material pious activities or material fruitive activities. Fruitive activities meaning prescribed activities in the Vedas that bring enjoyment in this life and piety in the next life and upgrade first class the compartment. And there's nothing more. Now, the Bhagavatam is wanting us to understand there's a world of difference between those two things. Devotional service to the personality of Godhead, because he is beyond time and he is beyond the whole material creation. One who engages in devotional service also attains that platform, and after this body is finished, stays on that platform or attains the eternal abode of the Lord. And that's altogether different. It is different. It's the culmination or the ultimate fruit. Vedaish desire vayar aham eva vejo Vedantakrit Vedavid Evacham, chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. And one can know Krishna through devotional service, and not through these other activities. One can become pious, but one can't understand Krishna through pious activities alone. And therefore, these activities that Maharaj Pariksit describes. He was king. He was grandson of the Pandavas. He was affixed in his devotion to Krishna. He's a pure devotee of Krishna, king. but because he was king, he was setting an example for his subjects by engaging the brahmanas in karmakanda activities for the benefit and for the upliftment and for the example of the citizens in general. But his own personal example was he was fixed in pure devotional service. He did that as a king. He lost all interest in those things. I mean, he lost all participation, but he also lost all interest in those things for the sake of exclusively fixing his mind exclusively, not in the worldly duties of life, because he gave up his royal garb and his royal treasury and his palace and his everything. Just a simple loincloth on the banks of the river Ganges, waiting for the understanding of how he should use this remaining time. Now, exclusively fixed. There's the last part of texts 4, because we're going to read 5 and 6. So it was longer than a 5-minute summary, but Prabhupada quotes several places just to underline this fixed mind upon the personality of Godhead. He quotes Bhagavad Gita 2:41, Yavasayat Nika Buddhi Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Fixed in devotion to the personality of Godhead. In intelligence single pointed upon Krishna. Then he quotes Baladev Vidyabhusan. Baladev Vidyabhusan is a great acharya in our line of disciplic succession who made commentaries on many of the scriptures, including Bhagavad Gita. And he's giving here in Sanskrit a definition of Vishuddha Chitti, or purified intelligence. Completely purified consciousness, Vishuddha Chitti. Bhagavata Archana Rupaika Nishkam Karma Bir. So we know what Nishkam Karma is. Nishkam Karma. Activity done without any desire. Nishkam Karma. While engaging in activities without any fruitive purpose in those activities, consciousness completely absorbed in the personality of Godhead. Bhagavata Archana Rupaika Nishkam Karma Bir Vishuddha Chittaha. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. Like that. So it doesn't mean just think of Krishna, do nothing. It's not that the passive meditation that he's advocating. Perform prescribed duties with consciousness completely absorbed in the personality of Godhead, single-pointedly. So Maharaj Pariksit's duty at this particular time is prepare himself for death, it's coming. So his worldly duties were stopped, and his duty then became this one primary duty only, hearing about the topics of the personality of Godhead. So, that's review. And now the two verses. It's important, actually, to take that time for the review, because the two verses, what might you think that Maharaj Pariksit asked about to prepare himself to fix his mind upon the personality of Godhead? Not the topics of the 10th canto, because we're still in the 2nd canto. It's the topics of the relationship between this cosmic manifestation and the source of the cosmic manifestation. He specifically asks Shukadeva Goswami, can you please describe how he did it? How the Supreme Personality of Godhead made all of this happen? How did he work with his energies? It's not just a technology question. It's a appreciating two things. Appreciating how the Personality of God is the source of everything, and just how wonderful he is. Prabhupada would teach this over and over and over. Amongst the population of the world, so many are godless. Godless civilization. Even there may be, sorry to say, so many places of worship all over the place, but persons don't lead their life in a godly manner. So the godless civilization is abundant, and it's very oppressive. But even amongst those who are godly, they say that they accept the existence of God. But who is God? How great is God? You have a short list. Along with a short list of some complaints. Why did he let wars happen and things like that? Young children suffer and poor people starve and my best friend who lost his wife. Something. So, how great God is, just the entry point, at least as far as the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead in Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, is to understand sambandha gyan, the relationship between the creation, which is all around us, it's not just out the window, it's here we are. What's the relationship of where we are with God? How has it come into being, and how is it being maintained? How is it working? Here's what he says. O learned Brahmana, you know everything because you are without material contamination. Therefore, whatever you have spoken to me appears perfectly right. Your speeches are gradually destroying the darkness of my ignorance, for you are narrating the topics of the Lord. Of course, he hasn't specifically described yet the topics of the Lord. He's described those are the topics that one should hear. But even making such a statement is the topics of the Lord, it's glorification. We can't say that about some mundane subject matter. Whatever subject matters in the university that will help entitle someone to get a nice job, it's not going to cleanse their consciousness of all material contamination. We can't make that statement factually. So he's not only making the statement, he's saying, this is what I'm experiencing. So I want to hear more. Prabhupada's comment is, this is a test. When I'm going on Wednesday to Dallas, Texas. And one of the topics that they're asking me to speak about is standard measures of how one can understand one is advancing in spiritual life. Here it is, right in the purport. There's an awakening, something happens inside. It's not just you have more information and people press your buttons and you can say the information back. You get a machine to do that. And a lot of our education is that kind of recitation, regurgitation. Take some information, press a button, it comes back out, you get an A in your exam. But this is not information, it's transformation. And that echoing the statement that was made in the third chapter, this change of heart or transformation. is a sign that spiritual advancement is taking place, and that transformation that Maharaj Parikshit is saying is happening within him, is contaminations are being eliminated. Or in the language of Rupa Goswami from Nectar of Devotion, Kleshagni and Shubhada, these two things. The pangs of material existence are being eliminated. And auspiciousness is awakening, Shubha Da. He's feeling enlivened, spiritually enlivened, including enlivened, even transcendental senses are being cleansed. His senses are being cleansed and his senses are being enlivened, excited, transcendentally inspired to go further. Prabhupada quotes a verse from Svetashvatara Upanishad. It's mentioned a couple of times in Bhagavad Gita. Yasya devi para bhaktir tata devi tata guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmana, that only unto such a fortunate great soul who has fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead and the spiritual master, yasya devi para bhaktir tata deve tata guru, only into such a person are the imports of the Vedas revealed within their hearts. So that's one of the symptoms, transcendental knowledge. Divyam jnanam tato dadyat, the transcendental knowledge is awakened from within. Or the first canto of the Bhagavatam speaks of the same. Causelessly, knowledge and detachment awaken in the heart of one who engages in devotional service. When Prabhupada first introduced Krishna consciousness to the young counterculture personalities, hippies of the Lower East Side, who knew nothing about nothing as far as spiritual life is concerned, Prabhupada didn't introduce so much terms and technical procedures and rules and regulations. He engaged them in chanting the holy name and explained the teachings of Krishna consciousness. And because transcendental knowledge was awakening within their heart, then detachment from that former way of life was just falling away. They asked Prabhupada, are we supposed to be following some regulations? Some restrictions? Swamiji? He said, yes, I'll tell you later. And then the restrictions. And then they followed because transcendental knowledge was awakened. It was easy to follow. But that's not the starting point. The starting point is this merciful association, hearing and chanting, detachment. So he's describing, that's what's happening. The inauspicious things of the heart are becoming relieved. And my eagerness to hear from you, Shukadeva Goswami, is, it's up there. Now, I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the great demigods. So the great demigods are ruling, they're controlling agents of the personality of Godhead. They're bewildered. Muhyanti yat surayaha. The Bhagavatam describes. So, how is one going to come to the position of not being bewildered. If all the demigods are bewildered, the implication is we are too. University students and university professors and university administrators, the government officers, the people in general that elect those government officers, the whole caboodle, buoyanti, by the influence of the literal energy. So, what's the remedy? What's the medicine? Medicine is this hearing very carefully from the right source and regularly hearing. Shunvata Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridyantaksto Hyubhadrani Vidhunoti Saritsatam. First Canto Bhagavatam. Sutta Goswami is describing the heart becomes cleansed by this regular hearing process. Automatically one's life becomes transcendentally nurtured, transcendentally pious. Punya, Shravana Kirtana. It's not the mundane piety, it's a transcendental punya. The soul's nature is being restored, like a person who has a severe fever, disease. The fever, disease is being lifted by this medicine. Bhavosarach chotra manoviramat. Medicine is being administered to the soul through this hearing process. And the original consciousness of the soul is being restored. That automatically takes care of this feverish condition of material existence, just in and of itself. So, Maharaj Parikshit wants to hear from Shukadeva Goswami. He's been the king. Not just one of many kings, he's the emperor of the world. What opportunities for hearing hasn't he had? I mean, the most learned persons around, they've been his companions and teachers. But Shukadeva Goswami is completely 100% pure in his devotion, so Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, from whom we hear is very important. What we hear is very important, and from whom we hear is very important. He describes, the purport is 4 pages long, so I was tempted to read it because it's brilliant, but it might take too long. But he's describing in a variety of ways, there's grades of consciousness, just as there's grades of species of life. Within a species, there's grades of species. Doesn't go into it here, but there's crows and there's swans. Even amongst the birds, there's variations within species. So within human consciousness, there's also gradations of consciousness. And I'll just read a bit. It's really nice. An inexperienced boy may be struck by wonder by seeing the impersonal actions of electronics or many other wonderful things conducted by electrical energy. You've seen this? Little remote control toys, and kids see the little car going that way and then that way. And and the little boy sitting there with the little control gadget is laughing and laughing. And that's just children. So many things by electronics, they can happen amazing. Prabhupada described when he was a young boy, I forget, it was either he saw a train or saw a car and asked how was it running. I forget the exact story. But he, you know, he couldn't believe. Anyway, that when there's a machine, even if it's a, whether it's remote controlled or immediate control, it takes a person to run the thing. So with electronics, there may be something that's happening remote. I remember when somebody first told me about a fax machine. I thought they were teasing me. No, it's true. You put a paper in over here, and over there a paper comes out looking the same. Oh, come on. Stop. This isn't nice. You just shouldn't. No, it's true. It's true. Oh, amazing. So with the person that knows the technology, it's 1, 2, 3. Or it means it's, you know, 1 through 10. But it's understandable. So there are gradations of understanding things in this world. Experienced man knows that behind the action of an electronic device is a living man who creates the energy through his electrical powerhouse. The research scholar finds out the cause and the effect of everything, but research scholars as great as Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and many other demigods are themselves bewildered by seeing the wonderful creative energy of the Lord. So what to speak of the tiny mundane scholars dealing with petty things? As there are differences in the living conditions on different planets of the universe, and as one planet is superior to others, the brains of living entities in those respective planets are also of different categorical values. So he is wanting us to understand that someone may hear about the activities of Krishna, not understanding who Krishna is. They'll look at Krishna as, well, you know, there's a few options. Maybe, here's Prabhupada's little list. Maybe one of the demigods, maybe an historical person, maybe it never happened, it's just a myth. But to understand the topics of Krishna, one, it helps to understand how great he is by understanding how the material energy is working under his direction. So that's the entry point. Then Prabhupada marvels that it's 7 days until he's going to die. And Maharaj Pariksit asks about the universes. Might seem strange. How many people in a deathbed said, can you tell me about the universe? How it works? And he did not ask Shukadeva Goswami to narrate Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He wanted to first hear about the creation of the Lord. Likewise, Shukadeva Goswami did not say that the king should hear about the direct transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Time was very short. And naturally, Shukadeva Goswami could have directly gone to the 10th canto to make a shortcut of the whole thing, as is done by the professional reciters. But neither the king nor the great speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam jumped up like the organizers of Bhagavad Kathas. Both of them proceeded systematically so that both future readers and hearers might take lessons from the example of the procedure of reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Now this is the part I highlighted. Those who are in control of the external energy of the Lord, that's the demigods, or in other words, those who are in the material energy, must first of all know the external energy of the Lord, how it is working under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and afterwards one may try to enter into the activities of his internal energy. So, thus approaching the lotus feet of the Lord. Sambandh again. How is everything situated in relation to him? What is the relationship of all of this? This awesome, powerful material energy. And the wielders of this material energy, what's their relationship with the source of everything? The mundaners are mostly worshippers of Durga Devi, the external energy of Krishna, but they do not know that Durga Devi is but the shadow energy of the Lord. Behind her astonishing display of material workings is the direction of the Lord as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Dyakshina Prakriti. Only one conclusion here. Only when one knows Lord Krishna's greatness can one firmly put one's unflinching faith in him. This is the same, you know, how great is God? If we understand how great is God, it's much easier to love him. To say, God exists. That's nice. That's a step beyond the atheists. Now, how great is God? To hear how great is God factually inspires one in devotion to him. At least it should, if we're honest, if our hearts are not hard. Just like if you're in the presence of a great person in the world, well, what people consider to be great persons in the world today is another thing. I've experienced in New York with the India Independence Day Parade, they have a sure way to get the maximum audience. You want to guess? Invite a Bollywood star or one of the big cricket players. And they get a big audience. And as soon as that person leaves, it's over. The event is over. Because the event is that person. Because they, or supposing, you know, at the university, the governor of the state was going to pay a visit. Or the presidential elections are coming up. Supposing one of those guys running. They want to, you know, get some votes, so they were going to come to the campus. What would happen? So many students would come to the turnout because he's a great personality. That's just a mundane personality. What to speak of the Supreme, if we could understand how great that sound vibration of how great is God is not different than God being in the presence of that sound vibration will inspire or evoke some interest to try to do something for him, to serve him. That's the idea. Not just duty or guilt if you don't, but genuine inspiration and purification. So therefore, Maharaj Parikshit wants to go more deeply in this subject. It goes on for several chapters. So the questions he asks about the process of creation and then Shukadeva Goswami describing. And I don't know if they have any courses in civil engineering on this topic, or electrical engineering or mechanical engineering or any kind of engineering. But it's right here in Srimad Bhagavatam by Professor Shukadeva. We heard it from Dean Vyas. And with that, we'll continue tomorrow morning. Any comments or questions?
Guru Maharaj, especially these topics about creation and so on, it seems that only a devotee can possibly recite them to invoke that inspiration, whereas someone can easily get attracted by discussions of pastimes of Krishna, like the 10th canto pastime and so on. They could be more easily pretended by someone who is not pure, whereas the discussion on these types of topics, to me it appears that it can only be described in an inspiring manner by someone who has actually got the affection for Krishna.
Well, another perspective on that is those that don't have attraction for Krishna but have some fascination for Gyan might become attracted to the technical aspect of how it all fits together, and next thing you know, they just discovered they're in touch with Krishna. In other words, impersonalists like Sankhya philosophy. How does, you know, how do things fit together? How does it all work? I can say, you know, from my experience in the beginnings of Krishna consciousness, I had such attraction. There wasn't so much for, you know, out of devotion for Krishna. I was, like, fascinated by how it all fits together. And I would spend significant amounts of intellectual energy trying to sort it all out. Then I realized that's not giving me any taste or any real happiness to see how it all fits together or sorted out. Real happiness is attraction to Krishna. But then, that's because I was hearing from a pure devotee who was giving me Krishna, and you know my radar was looking for, you know, information. So the information was there, and behind the information was Krishna. So your point was only one who has a taste for devotion for Krishna can present it in an attractive manner. Is your point? Yes, what attractive manner for a devotee means that Krishna is there in the whole experience. But for one who's a neophyte, they may be attracted to someone who's, you know, giving lots of information. Like with chanting, similarly, in America today, in the yoga circuit, chanting, they call it specifically bhajan. I don't even know if they know what the word means. It just means singing, but you know, bhajan. And it's becoming really fashionable. And the persons who are singing are impersonalists, but people are attracted. And those persons aren't delivering Krishna bhakti. They're singing, attractive, and some of them are even so attractive. Their musical skill, but there's something about it. It's soothing or calming or something like that. So intellectuals are attracted to intellectual stuff, and ordinary people may be attracted to nice music, soothing music. The real test, though, is Krishna bhakti being awakened? That's the real test. As Prabhupada would say, out of all the translations of Bhagavad Gita, where is there one devotee of Krishna? Where is the one person who has dedicated their life to serving Krishna from reading so many Bhagavad Gitas? And so much discussion goes on in academia about you know, the cause of creation. They didn't use the word creation, the cause of life. And people get up, they get really absorbed in it without any real spirit of devotion behind it. And so the real test is, from the Bhagavatam perspective at least, is where's the devotee? Where's the devotion? So the same subject matter from Shukadeva Goswami is enlivening Maharishi Parikshit, who has no shelter in anything material. Shukadeva has no shelter in anything material. Talking about creation. I mean, apparently just, explicitly material subject matter. Both becoming transcendentally enlivened. And it's not just exchanging information. That's the qualification of the speaker, yes. And the qualification of the listener also. Anything else?
You mentioned hearing about how great God is will evoke a sense of responsibility or wanting to
do something, wanting to serve Him, yeah.
So that's not happening in the hearing process. The hearer is not hearing with that attention.
Well, from the third chapter, the heart is steel framed. And then Prabhupada explains that means there's offenses in chanting. Starting with inattentiveness. And so forth. The hearing process is not being carried out properly. So it's not, that's not a shame on you kind of a, you should feel bad kind of a message. It's just a factual statement. There's, when a qualified person like Shukadeva Swami is speaking, and one is the conditions that are laid out, and one is paying attention, and the heart doesn't change, then there's offenses. Something wrong in the hearing process, yeah. So fix the problem. Don't feel bad. Fix the problem. And it may take some time, because how long? Giriraj Maharaj was describing that in Juhu, he was with Srila Prabhupada in his quarters upstairs at the Juhu temple, chanting with Prabhupada in the morning. Prabhupada would do that in the morning hours, invite some devotees, and they would chant together. And then Prabhupada paused and spoke to Giriraj Maharaj and said, to chant the way that I'm now chanting took me 30 years of practice. And Giriraj Maharaj, the young man, was thinking, wow, 30 years. And now, 37 years later, he's thinking, boy, if only 30 years would do it. he was not, in the course of explaining that exchange with Prabhupada, he wasn't analyzing, did Prabhupada literally mean what he said, 30 years, or what was he doing, what was the intent behind his speaking in that way. He didn't go there. But it's not, at least he could understand Prabhupada was encouraging him, you know, don't think because my heart is not melting, I'm this bad person. Rather, continue to practice. In a very attentive, very careful way, over time, and the purification will become effective like that. Prabhupada also taught, if you can chant one name of Krishna in each mantra, there's 16 times you have the chance times 108 times 16 comes out to 25,000 chances. Every day that you chant 16 rounds, and one name was chanted without offense, your life would be perfect. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Keep crying. However long it takes. Something? Anyone? Yes, another. Yes. Not exactly automatic, but yes. Not automatic in the sense of mechanical, but automatic. It along with one comes the other. When you have one, you have the other. When you have attentive chanting, there's detachment. Prabhupada paraphrases Bhakti Parishanu Vavo Viraktira Nyatra Chasav, you know the verse. But for those that don't, he says that when one is eating, a symptom of eating is that hunger goes away. And a weakened body that may have been weakened by fasting, strength comes back to the body. And one feels full. So that sense of feeling full is the sense of satisfaction that comes from hearing with attention and detachment from other things. It's a symptom. Like the symptom of a hungry man that eats. The symptom of, so, is there, where's the appetite? The eagerness to hear. When there's eagerness to hear, then one hears with attention. And the symptom of that is detachment from other things follows. However deep-rooted, tendencies that are materially conditioned slacken. So we can make effort on both sides. That is, eagerly try to hear and systematically try to dismiss things that are extraneous. We don't really need them. Or we recognize they're not good, they're detrimental. We should do without them. And the strength to do that comes from hearing. Say it the other way. If we don't have the strength to do so, we can understand we're not hearing properly. This hridaya dorbalyam, I know what I should do, I don't do it. What's that? There isn't strength of conviction behind. So that's, say, a type of anartha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Harinam Chintamani something that we have to overcome, anartha nirriti, overcome by striving to chant, hear and chant carefully, attentively, then strength will come. Then not only the theoretical, I know what I should do, the strength is there, I do it. So, shortcomings or weakness of mind, weakness of conviction, it's overcome. Strength comes instead from hearing, proper hearing and chanting. And as we just heard the previous question, of the eagerness to serve. The medium of service it also gives us strength, nurtured by hearing. Anything else? You all don't know me, so you're intimidated. You have something?
When the hearing becomes strong, and then it discriminates between the material energy and spiritual energy also grows.
Yes.
But sometimes there is a strong tendency to rationalize facts instead of arguing on the basis of scriptural arguments.
Right.
So how to overcome it? Is rationalizing good, or should we just take the shelter of scriptural?
Well, there's your voice is very soft. Did you hear his question? You did. You're sitting right next to him. Did you hear his question? Sairathi, you heard? Kind of. See if you can say it back.
Should I repeat?
Yes. Just turn up the volume. Amplifier.
As we hear, our ability to discriminate between material and spiritual energy increases. It grows gradually.
You got it.
But at some point, I feel like I tend to rationalize things rather than arguing on the basis of scriptural.
Is that rationalize things within yourself or to others?
It's both, actually.
Okay, let's start with to oneself.
Yeah. So, how to clearly identify, is it good to do this?
Good to rationalize things?
Yeah. Or we should just take the shelter of scriptural principles?
Well, can you give an example? Because I can think of some, here's a scriptural example where Mother Yasoda used her rational faculties to decide how to serve Krishna. Twice, actually, in the Damodar Lila. She was feeding Krishna, and the milk on the stove was boiling over. So she had to decide, let the milk boil over, that's okay, I'm feeding Krishna, because Krishna is all important. Or put Krishna down and go rescue the milk.
So
what did she do? She considered. This is what our acharyas say. She called upon her faculty of reason. She used her rational faculty and thought, the milk boils over, it's spoiled. I can come back and feed Krishna. I'll save the milk first. And our acharyas describe, even on the platform of spontaneous devotion, like Mother Yasoda, what to speak of regulative devotion like ourselves. There are sometimes conflicting things that may appear to be required simultaneously, and it is the duty of one to consider priority. Do one to its completion and then the next. And the ability to do so comes from the prompting from the Lord in the heart, inspiration from the Lord in the heart. But there's prompting, but still, where does it say in the scripture? Should I save the milk or should I continue breastfeeding Krishna? Then you're not going to find a scriptural statement that answers that one. So you have to draw upon your faculty of reason. But it's not, so it's it in this in the service to Krishna, in service to Krishna, which is most appropriate, not what I want, but in service to Krishna, what's appropriate? Then again, after she came back, she saw the butter pot broken. She used her rational faculty. Krishna did this. He became angry. She didn't see it. Krishna didn't confess it. She just deduced. She used her faculty of reason. Besides, you saw the little footprints of Krishna with butter going across the floor. That was further confirmation. Evidence. She deduced Krishna did it. So in service to Krishna, we may use our God-given gift called mind and consider, contemplate within the mind how to, what's in this particular circumstance, which is most appropriate. Now, when applicable, we should consider that which we are contemplating in the light of Scripture. In other words, is this in violation of some code of religion? Or have I received some instruction to the contrary? Should I become catatonic and I can't act unless Scripture tells me to? Action may be required. And further examples. But what specifically being cautioned against is to speculate about the nature of the absolute truth. Does that help? Does that address the question you're asking? Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.